This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Special Edition, Moonfall versus Geostorm.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Special Edition, Moonfall versus Geostorm. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Look out!
And we are here to talk about two disaster films, Moonfall and Geostorm. There'll be spoilers, or just a spoiler warning, and you may be wondering why, if you're listening.
Why not?
Why not is the answer. But
yeah, that's truly the answer. This month, we both happened to Moonfall showed up on HBO Max, and we both were basically watching it at the same time and having a fine old time on the text message. And then Connor went right along and watched Geostorm afterwards, and I was like, I think I need to watch that. I couldn't remember if I'd seen it or not, and I still am not sure.
Well, the thing is, like, you know, our love and enjoyment of disaster films is well known amongst listeners. Yes. We just last week released a media splode in which we reviewed The Poseidon Adventure from 1972. And as Josh said, Moonfall hit HBO Max a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we were watching it independently. Like, he was watching it, and I was also watching it. And then we didn't know we were watching. Then we started texting, and I was like, I'm watching Moonfall. He's like, I'm watching Moonfall. And then HBO was pairing it with Geostorm, so like it was like Moonfall Geostorm, like on the
dial. Suggestions under the Moonfall entry were just, I was like, this is beautiful.
So I had never seen Geostorm, one of the more recent disaster films. So I thought, what the hell, I'll watch that too. And I either watched it that night or the next day. I don't remember. It was a while. It was a lot of blowing up. But I ended up watching them both. Josh ended up rewatching Geostorm, which previously he told me not to bother with. And we thought we'd discuss it because it is actually really interesting what these films represent in terms of the genre of disaster films, the modern genre of disaster films, because they both come from the same camp.
Well, so it's interesting, and this occurred to me, is that so Moonfall is directed by Roland Emmerich, yep, and Geostorm is directed by Dean Devlin.
Right.
And that's the team behind Independence Day, which, since it's an alien movie, so it's not usually my typical description of a full-on natural disaster movie, but in a way it kind of is. But in either way, I think that's the era of the modern.
Yes. It's sort of a whole movie. Because it... So that Independence Day was 1996. It was one of the first of those genres to really utilize new technology in terms of visual effects. So it really blew people away and ushered in a whole string of those kind of films. And then, you know, they went on to do The Day After Tomorrow and 2012. And, you know, this is their whole sort of milieu. Well, they do other films too, but this is they sort of own that milieu.
I think they split after Independence Day.
They might have, but that was
brings up the point is that like you and I are the types of folks that when we watch a movie, we're very aware of who the director is.
Oh yeah, so Emmerich did 2012, but Dean Devlin wasn't involved, so they must have split. Yeah.
So, but the point is actually though that I don't remember. I don't know who directs disaster movies.
Right.
Like it's a thing. I don't care. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of surprised when I started. I didn't check before I said, when I saw Roland Emmerich's name in the beginning, I was like, oh, but I had forgotten, like, he was responsible for The Day After Tomorrow in 2012, which are two of my, Day After Tomorrow is my favorite.
Day After Tomorrow, terrific, terrific movie.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's a feel to it. But these, poor Los Angeles. Los Angeles has been destroyed in these movies.
Well, you live
so
here long
often.
Enough. Eventually, you want to destroy it.
No, that's
so,
fine.
Let's talk about each one, and then we'll talk about how they sort of relate to each other and to and to the previous work. And the conversation may go in various directions, but I remember seeing the trailer for Moonfall when it first showed. It was probably during the lockdown because it came out in 2022. Although I don't know when it came out in the theaters.
I saw it in theaters at one point, and it had such a low Rotten Tomatoes that I just kind of glanced at it and then didn't really pay attention to what it was. And I'm kicking myself for it now.
Right, I mean, I think these movies are always going to have low Rotten Tomatoes scores, Josh. So it's just a matter of what you feel like you want to do at the theater. But this was, you know, I don't think there's been a big. When's the last time there was a big disaster? I mean, there was San Andreas, and then there was the other
Geostorm. San Andreas is 2015. Geostorm is 2017.
What was the building one that The Rock did?
Skyscraper?
Skyscraper.
No, that was the whichever. That one was terrible. We try, you know, like it's
that
funny.
Was 2018. I'm just trying to figure out the timeline of disaster.
Greenland, which is
Greenland,
a little more serious,
right.
Was during the pandemic.
Right.
You
never go more than a couple of years without these films coming out.
No.
It's more like every 2 years there's a disaster movie.
Well, and when we talk about like if a movie's good or bad, it's very interesting because, you know, on paper, Moonfall, this is not a good movie. There's all sorts of reasons. But for me, a disaster movie has different rules. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like pro wrestling.
Right.
Like you want it to hit these notes that you recognize. And the best part about Moonfall to me is that it is a greatest hits of Roland Emmerich moments all mushed into one.
Yeah, that kind of is the case of the movie. It's almost like take a scoop of Independence Day and take a scoop of The Day After Tomorrow and put them both on a cone, and that's what you've got with Moonfall. Is a movie in which the moon is literally falling out of orbit and is breaking apart, and so that's sort of the underlying disaster element of the movie. What is the repercussions of gravity going haywire and the tides and everything, and then throw in a bit of alien invasion from Independence Day with the reason why the moon is going out of orbit, and that's what you get with Moonfall.
Yeah, no, they like over and over through the movie, I kept going, this piece is from 20. Like, yeah. There's a stepfather.
Oh, yeah.
There's always a stepfather who the guy hates, but then turns out to be an okay guy, and he sacrifices himself and dies. I was like, oh, that's straight out of 2012.
Yep.
When they fly into the giant alien structure, and I was like, this was Independence Day. it was one thing after another, and this is where I'm talking about that sliding scale of quality. I was delighted with it. You know, I was like, oh, these are all because the stepfather was Michael Pena, who's like, he's kind of a, why do you not like Michael Pena?
It was supposed to be Stanley Tucci. He had to drop out of the film.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I like Michael Pena much better because he's so eminently likable that even if he's kind of a jerk at the beginning, like, when he turns around and sort of have things in the right. Okay, so we'll talk cast. Halle Berry.
Not only doesn't age, seems to have de-aged.
Well, what's funny is in the very first scene in the movie, it takes place in the past, and they did something to her.
Yeah.
And we were like, is that Halle Berry?
Yes.
And then they cut to the present, and I was like, oh, that's Halle Berry.
Because I was like, what'd she do to her face? I was like, who is that?
Yeah.
Is that Halle Berry? Because I knew nothing other than the general premise of the moon was falling.
Right.
I didn't know who was in the movie. I didn't know who made the movie. I just started watching it, and I was surprised every time somebody showed up. But even in the present day, I was like, she could. If you told me the character was 35, I'd say sure,
100%.
Yeah,
100%. She's a legend. She defies age. She's one of those beautiful humans who ever lived.
Yeah.
It works. Patrick Wilson. When you can't afford Tom Cruise, You know, Patrick Wilson will do that. And of course, Samuel Tarly. Don't know his name.
John Bradley. I'm looking at his. So that's sort of the main three. There are other people. You know, since this movie was funded by Chinese money, there's the Chinese actress who none of us have heard of, but is big in China, who plays the small part. And then Donald Sutherland shows up playing his character from JFK.
I was going to say exactly that to you, and I tried not to ruin it because I was a little ahead of you. I was like, oh, my God. He met Kevin Costner in the mall, got the Dalai Lama out, and now he's like – in this movie, he is the same character as the crazy scientist from Area 51.
Yes.
In Independence Day. I was like, oh, it's that guy who tells you, no, we've known about all this stuff all along. It's all going on.
I'm pretty sure it's because his son was one of the financiers of the film. That's what I read. That's why he's in the movie. But he's literally the guy who shows up and unwraps the conspiracy for the main characters so that you know the truth. And so it's the same exact role that he played in JFK, only this time it's aliens instead of
It's perfect because... like pro wrestling, we rely on stereotypes and signposts.
Yes.
And I don't want to be impressed. The suppression of disbelief is a different exercise in a film like this.
Oh, sure.
And all it should be noted, Connor and I both, I mean, it's among our top, I would say top five books of all time is Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson. Mm-hmm. And in that story, the very first thing that happens is the moon blows up. And it breaks into separate chunks, and it results in the atmosphere getting superheated and all life being scrubbed off of Earth, blah, 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 you go forward. And that is fairly heavily science-based with the best possible knowledge that we can have from futurists right now.
Right.
This movie takes a different tack. And like the whole time, like, that's not going to happen, but it's joyful when that happens.
Yeah, so of the main characters, Halle Berry and Patrick Wilson are astronauts. And they get pulled back into this disaster. And John Bradley, Samuel Tarly, is a quote-unquote doctor who believes in superstructures, which are the theory that there are these giant spaceships out in space that other civilizations have built that look like planets.
Person.
Yeah, so he's part of the fringe science movement. But it turns out he's correct. The moon is, in fact, a superstructure, not, in fact, a moon at all. It's a giant floating arc. Our ancestors, and we told you there were spoilers. Our ancestors built when their planet was being destroyed and came and seeded Earth with. It's a whole complicated situation, but
it's a better version of the Eternals.
It is. I found myself like I really enjoyed watching it. I also enjoyed talking to you while we were watching it. But I found myself really liking, as always, the survival stuff more on the planet than the alien stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. For sure.
You know, like the genuine, and we talk about this all the time with disaster films. Like it allows you to put yourself into the scenario of, oh shit, what would you do in this scenario? Was more fun to me than the smoke monster from Lost nanobot that they fought in the spaceship. And you know, the suspension of disbelief of like, we got to get to the moon. 2 minutes later, they're in a spaceship going to the moon. Like, you know, even if they pulled the space shuttle from the museum in LA, which I've seen and been to, they still can't get it up into space in a day. It's going to take a long time. But we'll talk about that too with Geostorm. But that kind of stuff is fun. But then when they spend a lot of time like dogfighting the nanobot aliens in the moon structure, I was like, all right, well, it's fun, but not as interesting as like trying to survive in, you know, the mountains of Colorado, you know, his family amongst looters and guys with guns, and that's more interesting to me.
The moon's gravity sucks the oxygen out of the air as it gets too close. I kept like one of the great things about this and Geostorm is that there's moments where you're like, the Earth doesn't survive that. Like the moon scrapes the Earth. That's game over.
Right.
I mean, by any scientific measure, you know, that's a problem you don't get past.
What was honestly had one of my favorite shots in the movie in a long time is when one point when they're like on Earth and the moon pops up like Mike Myers in the background, like in the back. It just goes and it's like there over the horizon. And I was like, this is great. Like, this is so dumb. And the thing is, like, you know, so dumb it's good is not usually something I subscribe to unless it's disaster movies, because it's sort of built into the DNA of the film, of a film like this. Like, it's not going to hold up to scientific scrutiny. And there are serious ones like Greenland, but and those can totally work. But to me, the sillier, the better, as long as there's a heartfelt undertone. Like The Day After Tomorrow, the reason why it's so great is because you really do care about the characters and the family, and you want to see everyone survive. So it all depends on the characters and the situation of survival you're put in. The more... Wait,
there's a father with an estranged child who he has to save?
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah. And the more sort of sci-fi action-y it gets. And Independence Day is different because Independence Day was an alien invasion story. So it was about that, and it worked in that sense. But here, you know, anytime we went away from the family elements and got to the, you know, long explanation about the alien civilizations, it was like, now there's two civilizations and they're at war?
This is the thing, is like, these are the kind of movies that everything goes out the window for me. Mm-hmm. So most of the time I prefer my natural disaster movies to be natural. There is an argument to be made that this other stuff, it's not supernatural, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw like the thing floating around in space, I thought, oh, that's not good. That's going to mess this up.
Right.
Like a comic book that you know, isn't just the thing. There has to be a vampire or whatever it is. But, you know, it was fine for me in this instance. And I think that...
Oh, I didn't hate it. It made it historically interesting, as we said before, as an overview of Emmerich's disaster career, where it becomes like, oh... This is almost like his last movie. I'm not saying it is, but it's almost like I'm going out with like a bang, and here's all of my greatest hits from all my previous films. And so in that sense, it was interesting.
What I want to know does he know that his scripts are bad?
I'm sure.
But that's like the thing he's decided to go for.
But bad compared to what?
I know, but does he think that he's doing a really heartfelt, emotional moment, or does he know that it's a little schlocky or stereotypical? Like, is he aware of that? And I don't know which way I would prefer.
Well, they're B pictures, no matter what.
This is what I'm getting at. Like Russ Meyers was aware that he was doing B pictures, and he leaned into it. And right. I have to think that a man who has been this successful doing this thing is exactly aware of what it is he is doing.
Well, I mean, I think he's aware of the genre he's playing in, and... Yeah. And what the conventions of that genre are. I mean, it's just, he's not making The Godfather here.
Let's talk about movies where it's still very clear that they're going to kill a minority character very early on every time. And like, it's not okay, but, you know, that's what's going to happen.
The nanny / possible love interest for the son, who is the Chinese actress.
It's true.
Wen Yu, who goes by Kelly Yu in the film, she survives.
And usually it has to be a lesser scientist or person who's related to one of the protagonists. That's usually where it goes, and they heroically.
There's less
do
of that
something.
Moonfall that comes up again.
That's true.
That's a Geostorm thing mostly, but I mean, I, at the end of the day, I had a lot of fun watching it. It was silly, but the leads were all good. Patrick Wilson really sells.
Yes.
Everything he's given to sell. He's charming and funny. I think I'm sort of becoming a late stage Patrick Wilson fan. Like everything he's in, he's really good in.
He's a different flavor of leading man, but I think you're right. Yeah, but you know he can be amazing because Fargo alone would have told you like, oh, this guy can do sort of everything.
But he can also sell the moon is falling. Yeah, like he sold it.
As did Halle Berry.
Yes.
Sometimes you'll put somebody like her in a movie and like they're just not meant to be there, but she owned it.
Right.
Oh, she was the one who had to get back for her son this time.
Right, right.
Like, she, yeah.
Well, it was, so yeah, good. You're right. And then, it was his son. Uh-huh. It was Patrick Wilson's older son, the delinquent.
Right,
who was
okay,
with Michael
right.
Pena. That was his family unit.
That's
and
right.
She had, she had her own. Family, but,
and then her ex-husband was the
DOD guy.
By the way, he's so at the end the idea is they have to fix the problem before the army nukes the moon, which very short-sighted on the part
which
of the moon.
I feel like they really lost it a chance to call the movie Nuke the Moon. I mean, I would see Nuke the Moon in the theaters.
No, 100%. And then at some point he pulls the There's actually two in each Geostorm. In this, there's a moment where a character does something, and I was like, "You don't come back from that in a legal sense." And pulling your gun on all the chiefs of staff of the army, yeah, doesn't matter what's going on. You don't come back from that. And there's another one in Geostorm we'll get to. I love that though. Oh.
I did think it was interesting that I think maybe 20 years ago, that dude who the ex-husband played by M.A. Ikwokor is played by a name actor. It feels like there was a big drop-off in Moonfall, uh-huh, between people you recognize and then the rest of the cast. Whereas in the past, these sort of are chances to like have all-star casts. And so like you've got Halle Berry, Patrick Wilson. You know who John Bradley is from Game of Thrones, but you don't know his name. Michael Pena, Donald Sutherland. And then after that, there's not a recognizable actor in the movie. So there's only like four, five. Whereas, you know, Independence Day, even small roles are played by, even in Geostorm, you've got Richard Schiff playing a senator. Like it's almost like, I don't know if Moonfall had a smaller budget or what, but it was.
They're not tent poles anymore.
No, I mean, it's just interesting to see that it's no longer like.
I'm guessing
scroll through Independence Day's cast list, you know, people down to the small, you know. Part.
I'm guessing that, you know, like if they had pulled a larger lead, you know, I mean, like The Rock, just as an example of where it does work, is that sort of fills up the movie a little more. Another thing I noticed about Moonfall is that the effects get better as the movie goes on. At the beginning, there is, I don't think I'm mixing up my movies. There's miniature effects with flooding.
It's hard to remember which one's which.
And it's clearly not. Like it's not very, like you can tell the size of the water, the proportions isn't right.
Yeah.
And then as they get further along and they get onto the space, I was like, oh, here's where they spend all their
money. They clearly spent all the space stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Like very clearly. And I don't mind practical effects. I just, no, I like them. Yeah.
I do want to mention also in terms of greatest hit stuff, the Dr. Houseman character that John Bradley played was very similar also to the Randy Quaid character from Independence Day.
He's a combination of that guy and Jeff Goldblum's character.
Right, but there's always like the kook who was right.
Right.
You know,
Oh, Woody Harrelson.
Randy Quaid's character was claiming there were aliens and he'd been abducted and everyone thought he was a kook, but he was right. Houseman claimed that the moon was a superstructure. He was right. And Woody Harrelson claimed that there's always the one kook, like crazy person that's turned out to not be crazy.
So. Right, and then so Patrick Wilson's son was Jake Gyllenhaal in 2012, or I'm sorry, Day After Tomorrow. Basically, kind that's of. His I role mean, there.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
he takes charge. Well, I think yeah. Shades of, if nothing else.
Right,
and that all works for me. And I don't for some reason I had just forgotten that all those movies were directed by the same person.
It is crazy. He really is the go-to guy for these. I mean, those movies made a tremendous amount of money.
Yeah, but they didn't, you know, this one wasn't invested in the same way. No.
And it's curious why, because these movies kind of translate to any language pretty easily.
Yeah.
You know, it's harder when your film has a more intricate plot to, you know, sell it, you know, globally. But if you're just talking about the moon falling, it's not so bad. But like, I think The Day After Tomorrow made like $800 million. Like these are like huge, they were huge movies for a while. That Emmerich was doing. Let's talk about Geostorm.
Yeah.
So Geostorm, you were like, don't watch it. It's not worth your time. But I really had fun. I really had fun. It's a bad movie.
Oh yeah. No, it's where Moonfall, it's a bad movie, air quotes, but it does what you want to in this, the whole thing.
Right.
Geostorm, I mean, it suffers. I mean, one of the things you mentioned is that the leads, pretty much the main cast in Moonfall, is pretty good.
Yes.
And then, but in Geostorm, after Jared Butler, but the other leads are awful.
The thing about Geostorm, it had kind of more of the story I was looking for, because it was more about survival, except for a small part.
Yeah.
But the script was so bad. And I mean just like stuff that someone should have been like, well, what do we do? Like, I'll get to my main concern later because I don't want to blow it until we get to it. But this is more science-y. So, you know, this movie came out in 2017. It takes place in 2019 and beyond. And in 2019, you know, there's a giant global catastrophe with the weather. Sounds familiar. And so they somehow, with 2019 technology, build a futuristic space station and satellite array that they nicknamed Dutch Boy that controls the weather.
Dutch Boy is a brilliant name.
Yes, and it controls the weather and it diffuses, you know, giant hurricanes and storms and heat. It basically keeps the Earth in stasis using science. And the man behind the whole project was played by Gerard Butler, Jake Lawson, who is Scottish American, and his brother, who is American American, played by Jim Sturgis, who has a terrible American accent. And Jim works for the government.
A weird haircut and no screen presence.
Well, he was great in Across the Universe, but I don't know.
He's a nickel version of what's his name? Wardo from Social Network.
Was he the assistant secretary of state? It was hard to say what his role was, but Andy Garcia is the president. Ed Harris is the secretary of state, I guess. And
yes, he was.
Abby Cornish is his head Secret Service agent, who's also sleeping with Jim Sturgis's character. And then you got Mara Whittingham popping up for one scene, and Richard Schiff popping up for one scene. And that's more of like your all star small cast situation. But here, anyway, the point is. Brilliant setup to use international actors, because that's, you know, Eugenio Derbez is a big star in Mexico, and you've got Daniel Wu from China, and people like that. You got a German actress, Zazie Beetz shows up in a pivotal role. So you've got people from sort of all over, which is smart in terms of selling your movie. But of course, something goes wrong with technology. Someone zaps a village in Afghanistan with cold air and freezes everyone. Then there's a lava flow in Hong Kong, and suddenly Dutch Boy is malfunctioning, and so the guy who Gerard Butler's character, who had been fired from the project for being a jerk, is brought back in to try to fix it, and that's when we realize that someone is actually controlling the satellites to take out specific targets on the planet. And so you got a combination of sort of a political thriller plus a disaster movie, because now the weather is going out of control. Setup wise I enjoyed this idea more.
Yeah.
And I thought the first half was really fun. First half, I was like, ooh, this is really good. What's Josh talking about? And then the second half, I was like, oh, this movie's totally falling apart. But the first half, I was into it. I thought the setup was cool. I thought it looked good. I thought the ideas were fun. The acting was sufficiently over the top.
Right.
And then once you get into the machinations of the political plot, I was like, I don't understand this plot at all. Like,
well, The trailer
makes no sense.
The trailer laid it all out, but the trailer definitely made it sound like the president was the bad guy. And such to extent that
faked you out.
Yeah, I actually thought that's what actually happened. Mm. And then so I was kind of caught by surprise. I think I watched half of it, or watched it without paying it, or lost. Mm-hmm. I think I saw it, but I didn't really watch it. It's basically right where I ended up. And It was still enjoyable to watch. Yes. In that way. Absolutely, 100%. Not as enjoyable. Like, it's lower tier. It wasn't as bad as the Dwayne Johnson skyscraper movie.
I couldn't finish it, which I felt bad about, because I love him and those kind of movies. But
yeah, but it wasn't as good as any of the Emmerich stuff. And this is actually the only feature film that Dean Devlin
right, so this is Dean Devlin's first directorial experience. He was a writer-producer with Roland Emmerich before. Geostorm made $220 million worldwide, which is not good for a movie like this. To me, the biggest problem, so that you find out, and again, spoiler warning, you find out that the Secretary of State, Ed Harris, is the one behind all this. He's trying to destroy all of the United States' enemies using Dutch Boy, and then in the process of that, destroying Dutch Boy as well, he puts a virus into it. But they went to great pains to tell you that without Dutch Boy, the world was over. And so, if he destroys Dutch Boy, then they're going to die. All die anyway.
And there's a bit where there's a person on the satellite who turns out to have been the plant on the inside, and they paid him. He said, you know how much a scientist makes? He's like, no. Well, it's 10 times that. And I was like, that still doesn't seem like very much to destroy the world. And Jared Butler's like, but it's gonna, you're gonna destroy the world. He goes, but we're gonna keep the good parts. And I was like, what kind of scientist are you who doesn't understand how that works?
the air doesn't stop at the border.
The good parts will be affected by the rest of it. That's how this works.
Right. That's where it started to fall apart. I was like, they really needed to take a second pass at this plot because it didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But I still enjoyed it. Like, I still had fun watching it.
I thought
it coasts a lot on Gerard Butler's charm and the cool design of the ship and the satellites and all that stuff, and Zazie Beetz was good, and it sort of got by on all that stuff.
If this was if this was a slightly better movie and they had the science a little more locked down, it would be amazing for me. Like, it's the kind of thing that I really enjoy. For me, I really thought that one of the problems was that the two non-Jared Butler leads, whose names you said before, the British guy with a weird haircut and stubble in a high government position, just didn't, like, he wasn't good. He didn't command screen presence in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And he over-emoted on everything. And I know that sounds weird, but like, his eyes were all watery and teary for half the thing. And I was just like, why are you... It just didn't make sense. And then his girlfriend, whose name you also said, Abby Cornish, who was in Jack Ryan, that show, I guess.
Yeah, she's a lot of stuff.
She does not have much screen presence. I get what she was doing. Like, she's like, I'm a serious person who is in the Secret Service.
Yeah.
You know, and she has a really great couple of action sequences.
Oh, she has a terrific action sequence when they rescue the president. Yeah.
Yep. And that was the other scene, by the way, that I was like, she shot off her gun at the Democratic National Convention, and then they kidnapped the president. And I was like, there's no coming back from that. In no circumstance. And he goes along pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, another thing, like, I don't know that there were any actual Americans in this other than Ed Harris playing Americans.
Well, Andy Garcia.
Yeah, but nobody had a good accent. And I don't know what Andy Garcia's accent is. But he's
Cuban. He came from Cuba. So
yeah,
he's
just a weird accent. But he's also like, it's mutated into his accent is Andy Garcia. So
yeah, you're right. I'm looking at the cast. It's basically Gerard Butler. I mean, he lives in West Hollywood, but he's Scottish, and Jim Sturgess is.
But he can't do an American accent either. He does.
No, they didn't even try. They just said, you just be yourself, and your brother will have a different accent, and who cares?
Mm-hmm.
I think Abby Cornish is Australian. Like, everyone
is. She is.
Yeah.
And then the German lady. You could have cut her character out of this entirely, and it would have made no difference. And also,
she's actually Romanian. That's interesting.
She had no screen. Like, I was like, why is she there? Real, like, terrible. And she had a really big moment where she goes back to save him. But just like, wow. It's just awful screen presence. Just nothing.
I couldn't tell if they're trying to set her up as a love interest for Gerard Butler's character, and I was like, they have no chemistry together.
None.
It was weird. It's weird. Like, again, these were movies that sort of prided themselves on having terrific casting. Even if you look past Independence Day, The Day After Tomorrow has a great cast, and 2012 has a great cast, even down to the small parts. And this one, it seems like they fall off quickly now.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. You would think that this is the kind of thing that has, you know, wide global appeal. And maybe it does. Maybe they just figured out we don't have to spend that kind of money. You know, maybe it's like a dollars and cents kinds of thing. But,
It wasn't... I mean, I had a fun time back-to-back with both these movies.
Right.
However I watched them, I don't remember. But, you know, it wasn't... I was having more fun being like, why are you... This plan makes no sense, Ed Harris. Like, that was the fun I was having yelling at the TV because... It was dumb. It wasn't the satisfaction I got from, you know, there was one New Year's Eve several years ago in the before times where we had some people over and we ended up not going out. We ended up watching The Day After Tomorrow, San Andreas in 2012, like as a New Year's Eve marathon. And it was like the best night ever.
Yeah.
Because you can really get into the over-the-topness, but they really do a good job of making you care about the people. And they're played by great actors, or at least charismatic actors. And I didn't have that kind of fun watching these two movies back to back, but I had fun watching them back to back. They were much dumber than those movies.
There's something about, and we're talking about like suspension of disbelief, and that's actually not the right term, I think. It may to a certain extent, but you know when you're watching a movie and you go, that's completely wrong, and it takes you out of it? Mm-hmm. Or like people like to point out flaws. In this, pointing out the flaws is part of the fun. You know, it's like a horror movie. Like, don't go in that room.
Right.
what a terrible decision you're making. And I never liked horror movies, but I understand that. And I think these movies get to that. But for some reason, and it's a little intangible, is that Moonfall was more fun to do that.
I would, if I was ranking them, I'd rank the first half of Geostorm and then Moonfall and the second half of Geostorm. I really enjoyed the first half of Geostorm. I like the whole setup of the world, and I like the world and everything. But as a whole film, yes, Moonfall was more successful. I enjoyed it all the way through, even if there was some things I didn't enjoy as much. But yes, Geostorm falls apart halfway through and never recovers, really.
The moon scrapes along the surface of the Earth.
Well, it's not really a moon. It's a space station. In fact, it is a moon. It is a space station.
There were bits where the science is just close enough to be real.
Wait a minute. They never actually use that line. That line is right there for them.
What?
That's no moon. It's a space station.
I mean,
they
use
that
moon,
line
though.
In Twister, which had nothing to do with the moon, but they had it right there. You think that doctor guy would have been like, "That's no moon, that's a space station."
I feel like Emmerich isn't the kind of guy who wants to quote a different movie. That's not his thing. He's not going to be postmodern. He's not going to.
He's quoting his own movies.
That he can do. That's he's a tribute to himself, but he's not going to go over and give George Lucas
right
that.
There.
That's not
it
a thing.
It was on a platter.
I really did like. There was a thing about mass and like, well, if the inside's hollow, does it have as much mass as we thought the moon does? And how does that affect the gravity? And like, none of it got close to real science, but I don't need it to, you know, it's fine. Like they had in this movie at Cape Canaveral, they had just space shuttles lined up one after another.
Oh, that was one. Like, no, that was Geostorm where they had.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They had like.
You're right.
They had like 50 space shuttles just lined up like a taxi station outside of an airport.
And they were going up like every 5 minutes. And I thought, there's not that much fuel. It's really expensive to do that.
What is it doing to the environment?
It doesn't matter. They can fix it.
I guess they can. Well, those satellites weren't sucking air, pollution out of the air, were they?
Listen, these people, they think one step ahead. But again, that's the fun right there.
Right.
It's you know, it's the Grant Morrison thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
How do they keep the Batmobile? And don't worry about how they maintain the Batmobile.
Space station taxi service. That's fine.
But the movie, I think the trick is that you have to like something about it enough that you get enjoyment from ignoring that thing, as opposed to not being able to ignore that thing. And I think that's where the tone comes in. Like if
the movie you have to buy into the movie.
Right.
You have to buy into the premise. No matter how outlandish the premise is, if you buy into what they're selling, then you as an audience member will sell it, buy anything. So, like, you know, we all buy into these Marvel movies. If you take four steps back, the physics doesn't work. All these people would be dead. You know, Tony Stark is not immortal. When he gets smacked around in a suit, he would die. But we buy into it because we buy into the world. As soon as you lose the audience, it was like I always think back to the time we were at the screening of Punisher Warzone. And the audience had turned on the movie completely.
Right.
And it was a friends and family screening, which is more awkward. But like every little thing the audience was rebelling against because they no longer bought into the reality of it. You have to construct your reality enough to the audience has to want to buy into the physics of the craziness of it and not question every little thing.
So in Greenland from 2020, the idea is that a comet is going to destroy the Earth, and they know. And that movie is a little more serious.
Yeah,
so the science has to be a little stronger. No, right. The science has to be a little more, if not necessarily realistic, then believable. And then there's more drama involved. You're still trying to get your kids somewhere. Jared Butler, let this be his, like, give us either a rock flavored or a Jared Butler flavor. And he's in White House Down, too?
Yeah, which I also Emmerich. Enjoyed. Yeah.
Which is pretty, is adjacent to this genre, and like there's a more about like what happens on Earth, and they touched on that in Moonfall, where those like the robbers, you know, I was like, don't open the window, and he opens the window and they take his stuff, and I was like, well, why'd that, you know, and then those people showed up again, and that was good, but it like you're allowed to get away with being a little bit bad, and I'm not gonna say famously because nobody else knows about it for me. You know, I was a bigger snob at one point. I'm still a snob, and I don't like fun, but actually I kind of do. And I went to 2012 by myself one day, and I left. And I was like, this is stupid. And I went and I saw The Men Who Stare at Goats in the other theater instead. Now, I made a huge mistake. And
yes,
at some point between
that movie.
And I know, at some point between there and when I saw it later, like a thing clicked. And I went, no, I love this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm so glad that that was the thing that happened. And that I have you guys to go over it with. Because, and this is our horror movie. Like, we're not horror movie people. This is our horror movie. Which is just enough existential dread, but it takes it in such a way that you don't have to feel terrible. My friends in San Francisco were not into San Andreas at all.
Mm.
They did not like. I was like, aren't you excited about it? Like, no, not really.
That movie was great. I was looking while you're talking. I was listening, but I was also looking up the status of the sequel of Greenland because they did announce it a while back. And it's mired in some kind of financial situation with the financier STX, but it was acquired. It's got a deal.
Uh-huh.
It's just in the midst of this bankruptcy situation.
When we're talking about Greenland, because isn't there supposed to be a San Andreas?
No, Greenland, there's a sequel called Greenland : Migration.
See, that is the thing that we're missing, and also I probably will be terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Because we don't ever know what happens after this. You know, the last scene in San Andreas is like, we will rebuild. And I was like, you'll be rebuilding for a while. And, you know, like a sequel to that wouldn't be a disaster movie. It would be like...
really
like,
boring construction movie.
Well, no, that in society would be completely destroyed, and it's the road, you know.
Well, not San Andreas. Basically. That was just San Andreas' fault. Are you talking about Day After Tomorrow?
I mean, kind of the same. Like, in any of them, it's just like... it's really easy to be hopeful at the very end because the sun comes out and they're all there, but the world would be a hellscape.
Yes.
And it's a different kind of movie is what I'm saying.
Well, and I think that plays into, I guess now we're talking about Greenland too, but that plays into the idea of Greenland, which is more about the sort of the societal aspect of what happens here. So that would make sense that they would make a film would look into that.
Is the end of that?
It's where they all end up in Greenland in the bunker.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a little like 2012.
Yeah, but
they
it's
sort
not,
of pop out.
Yeah, kind of. It's not as fun. It's more like terrible. It's like everything is terrible.
Right,
more,
right, right.
Which I think why it took me two viewings to watch it. The first time I was like, this isn't fun at all. Uh-huh. And then I was like, well, I'll watch it again. And I enjoyed it more when I knew what I was in for.
You got to like the little take on it. I was trying to, there's another thing that it's like stuff in the bunker or after the fact, but I don't remember what it was.
I mean, there's lots of them. Even if you go back to the 90s and you get like Deep Impact or... you know, which is more Armageddon, they save the world, but Deep Impact, you know, the asteroid hits and
right.
So that's the one where they sort of have to rebuild. That's the one at the end where President Morgan Freeman's like, we're going to rebuild. And everyone's like, yay. That's how it ends. That one is like the whole world's been like, been flooded except for the really high elevations. And so that one might be what you're thinking of.
I was just remembering, like, oh, Richard Schiff is the government person who thinks it's all bullshit. The guy, because what's the one?
Richard Schiff is in Geostorm, but he's also in Deep Impact.
Yes,
he's a father in Deep Impact.
What's the one in? There's one of them where the president dies, and then the vice president was the guy who was really against. That's 2012.
2012. Yeah.
So the vice president's the bad guy, and he has to come to realize it, and then he's like at his mobile presidency, but they're in Mexico.
Yes.
Because
that's the one where it's sort of
No, that's the Day After Tomorrow. Oh,
yeah,
so
the Day After
good.
Tomorrow, the White House gets frozen. The helicopter that they're escaping in gets frozen. And so then the rest of the government is, yeah.
I think when I was watching Geostorm, when Hong Kong goes,
mm-hmm.
right away, I was like, this is ramping up very quickly. Like, it got hot, like, really fast.
Yeah.
And then huge skyscrapers just started exploding. And then that dude gets in a smart car and he gets out of the city somehow. And finally, he's on a highway somewhere out of town. And, you know, you turn around and the city's smoking and in ruins or whatever. And then you see the dashboard temperature go from like 150 down to like 70. And he gets out of, or lower. And he gets out and everything frosts over. And I just thought, that is the best feeling on earth.
Nice.
Just have it get so cold after a really hot day.
Hot day full of lava and destruction.
Right. But like, in a matter of 30 seconds, that went, which is the same thing that happened in 2012, actually. Like in, what was it? But did it get hot or was it only cold in that movie?
Well, the cold movie was Day After Tomorrow because they had that, right. It was that the freeze that came down and froze like the whole northern hemisphere.
And
2012 was the Mayan,
the freeze at one
the Mayan thing where it was like the whole world was the prophecy from the Mayans.
The crust, the Earth's crust, let go.
Right, and there was there was a whole bunch of disasters happening with 2012, but.
2012 had is very similar to this, and like when in Moonfall when they launched the shuttle and it has to get through all the debris, and I was like, no way.
This would be destroyed. It's like and then flying to a shotgun.
And then in Geostorm, it's when he's outside and the entire space station is out and there's shit flying everywhere, and I was like, no way. You don't survive that. But I'm going with it. Sure. Again, that saying no way, that makes it fun.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cast for 2012. It's again, it's like you can go down pretty deep until you hit names you don't recognize, and then you hit a bunch of like Chinese names again because it's a Chinese production. So, but you know, Cusack and Elgifor and Amanda Peet and Oliver Platt and Danny Newton, Thandiwe Newton and Danny Glover and Woody Harrelson, Morgan Lilly, Tom McCarthy. Like you start going deep into this cast before you hit people.
But one of our greatest American directors has a bit part. God, I love that. I mean, if there's no other reason to salvage relations with China,
right?
It's that someone needs to fund these kinds of movies, and it's not going to be American studios anymore. So,
well, I mean, they do fund big. You know, I'm sure if The Rock had another disaster movie in his pocket, that they would fund it.
Sure,
but they don't want to.
I feel like there was supposed to be a San Andreas sequel.
It could be, but you know, things happen. San Andreas 2
says that. It says here that Greenland had a $35 million budget. That's amazing.
Yeah, so I guess they had a San Andreas sequel in development, but it has gone nowhere. I forgot because Paul Giamatti was in San Andreas. I love that movie. Yeah.
It was his assistant who saved a kid at the cracking dam.
That's right.
And he was Asian, Hoover Dam. I think. Yeah, yeah. And he helped the kid with the backpack. And it's so great. I hope if you got through this far, I assume that you are listening now and you're like, these are great. And then this has helped you think about what it is that you like about them. Because that's for me is the fun part, is like, what is it that I like about this? And then we dig through it and we find the little things that make it all fun.
And the thing is, what you can like about it can be different for each one.
Uh-huh.
You know, Greenland's a very different movie than Moonfall.
Sure.
They're both enjoyable for different reasons. Even Geostorm is a different movie than Moonfall, different movie than 2012, different movie than Day After Tomorrow. But there are the common threads, which we talked about, the family aspects and things like that. But, you know, if it's sillier, then you can have more fun poking at it. If it's less silly and you're buying into it, like I don't sit there and poke at the Day After Tomorrow because I feel like it's a really well-made movie inside that space. So you're just like, you buy into the world and the
with
physics.
With silly
and
things
that
happen in it, which is great, which is fine.
But you also you don't grouse while you're watching. You're just sort of tense watching, you know, everything. Even with the silly dire wolves and everything. But, I mean, it was a very unexpected and fun weekend a couple weekends ago when Moonfall came out and hit HBO.
So, Brad Peyton is the director on San Andreas, and he also did Rampage with Dwayne The Rock
Johnson.
I saw
that. Did I see
it? It's actually pretty fun. It's dumb. It's very silly, but it's much more enjoyable than you would think as like sort of a video game property that has nothing to do with a video game.
I love that game.
Oh, it's super fun.
That was the best game to play after the movies because that was one of the games they had in our movie theater. And that was
Are the only two. Those only two. No, he did some really Cats and Dogs. The Revenge of Kitty Galore is directed by Brad Peyton. And then he did a movie called Incarnate, San Andreas. San Andreas was before that, and then Rampage, and then no movie since then.
Well, his emotional toll doing San Andreas.
I need to. There's one. It's called The Wave. I think it's Scandinavian.
Oh, I've seen that.
I think
yeah,
I
you
had
see
two
that.
A while ago. That's more of a serious one.
Yeah, that's totally a serious one. It's more based on real science of eventually one of these fjords is going to do this. Like I remember watching them being totally riveted by that movie.
Right. I need to watch that again. Yeah. I saw it a long time ago. And then you've got like The Impossible, which is like the true story version of like all of these things actually happen, but it still falls under that. I still give it that.
IMDb, which is of course by no means a, you know, 100% accurate, as San Andreas 2 is an upcoming film for The Rock, but who knows if that's actually accurate.
Yeah, sure. It's in development, which means it could last forever. Right. But I'm pretty sure that, like, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, I'm going to say it like that for some reason, he's going to be in this position he's in for at least another 15, 20 years to be an action star.
Yeah, oh, totally.
I can imagine that he'll just have all this muscle and underneath it, a very fragile, crumbling skeleton.
being pulverized.
As long as he keeps adding muscle, he won't wrinkle.
Although, when you go back and rewatch, I mean, we do have to stop this conversation at some point. When you go back and rewatch the Fast and Furious movies, you go back to like his first appearance, you're like, whoa! Because he's changed a lot even since then. He's gotten a lot bigger.
Yeah, it's strange.
Yeah. But anyway, this was fun. Watching the movies was fun. If you haven't watched the movies, I suggest Moonfall and Geostorm if you're into that kind of thing. And even though we've spoiled it for you, it's still a lot of fun to watch the how it full unfolds on itself. Yeah. There's a couple of things we haven't talked about, but
Emmerichism.
So what? How in the Emmerich versus Devlin situation here? I guess we have to go Emmerich.
He's got
more experience directing, so
yeah, I think that he's the one who sets the tone for exactly what this is.
He's the Dr. Carter.
he's the Jack Kirby of the. He's Elvis.
Well, no, the Jack Kirby is the guy from the 70s that we talked about on the Poseidon Adventure.
Right. All right, then he's somebody. He's Frank Miller. I don't know. He's this analogy is too difficult, but he's the modern father master of these kind of movies. He's the one you go see. You know, he's like at this point, like if I should never not go see one of his movies.
It's true. You need a little Google alert for his name, so that you know when his movie comes out. The Jack Kirby is Irwin Allen. He's the one that did Poseidon Adventure and then Towering Inferno.
Okay, you're fair. You're right.
Other movies that I've voyaged to the bottom of the sea. Anyway, so that was fun. That was fun. We'll rank so Moonfall fun. Over Geostorm.
Are we going to rate them?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know how you do.
I don't know.
I mean, if The Day After Tomorrow is a 5.
Right. And San Andreas is a 5.
And then, so that makes, and 2012 is like a 4.5.
Yeah.
That makes Moonfall, I'd say 3.5 in the genre, maybe 4.
I think Moonfall's in that 3 range somewhere.
Geostorm's a 3.
I would say 2.75 in the genre, because, again, the first half is terrific. The second half I thought was pretty bad. So it sort of, for me, evens out sort of like in a 2.75.
I'll take that. I'll give you that. I know it's. I don't want to take away from it because it's. Right. It was. Is it fun to watch?
Yep.
You know.
Oh, if you're. Am I ranking my weekend experience? My weekend experience was definitely like a 4, 4.5. You know.
Nice.
Watching the movie. So, Roland Emmerich has 2 films in development as director. In one of them, it looks like he's going back to the Stargate well, because he was one of the guys that did Stargate originally. Which the original movie is a really good movie.
Yes, I remember that. I saw that in the theater.
I did too. And then he has a very strange situation. I just lost it. Where did it go? Maya Lord. That's what the name of the movie is. The story of a 16th century Spaniard, Gonzalo Guerrero, who was held captive by a Mayan tribe and eventually converts to their ways and beliefs and fights for them against the Spanish. Very strange.
Answers my earlier question. Like, does he take it seriously? Or does he know what he's doing? And this was like, he's like, I'm going to do a real movie. And no one cared. Well, I feel like I need to watch. All right. I need to watch The Patriot again because saw it.
This was on TV that day.
I saw it at the time, but I was like, that's not good. But now I think I need.
He did Midway, too. Kid.
I want to see that. I realized.
You didn't watch it?
No, for some reason. What's Stonewall? About the Stonewall riots? Did he do a movie?
It might
be
because he's a gay activist. So I probably.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, we gotta compare and contrast. We have to come back for this. Like the serious films of Roland Emmerich.
White House Down versus Stonewall.
Oh man, that sounds awesome.
It is interesting because if you look at his career as a director, You know, there's some stuff in the 70s, early 80s. He did Universal Soldier with Van Damme, then he did Stargate, yeah. and then Independence Day, then Godzilla, then The Patriot, then Day After Tomorrow. He's on a roll.
I believe Godzilla's not good.
Right, but he's on a roll in terms of popularity. And then
yes.
10,000 BC, I vaguely remember
10,000 BC, I don't know if I watched it.
And then 2012.
We need to deep dive. I think we should come back and do another one of these.
You know, he has a pretty high hit rate. If you're talking about the types of films he makes, I mean, 2012 and then White House Down and then the unfortunate Independence Day sequel and then Midway and then Moonfall. So, like, in terms of director, he's got a pretty high. Yeah.
The Independence Day sequel was bad.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
It's just not good.
I don't think I even heard of 10,000 BC.
I remember the trailer. I think it was a little bit of concept-y film because there wasn't, like, dialogue. Everybody's very clean in
his photos.
Yeah.
Roland Emmerich, in a prehistoric past, Dele is a mammoth hunter who bonds with the beautiful Evelette. When warriors on horseback capture Evelette, the tribesmen Dele must embark on an odyssey to save his true love. So,
is that the one with Ringo Starr?
No. Yes, he plays Evelette. Omar Sharif is in it. He's a narrator. Weird. This is all weird.
All right, we have some homework. Let's go through. Let's do selections from the oeuvre and then reconvene.
All right. Well, this was fun as a impromptu little show. But of course, you can always listen to our regular podcast, the Pick of the Week show, which Josh and I. You're not John. I don't know who John is. Josh and I talk about the week's comic books that come out every week. That show comes out on Sundays. We have our monthly Booksplode, Talksplode, and Mediasplode shows. Mediasplode show is where we talk about non-comics media. It's kind of like this show. And we do it all at iFanboy.com. And some of those shows are brought to you by the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks to everyone who's a patron. Please join up if you can. And we'll be back with some other show sometime soon. Until then, I'm Connor.
At the longest, it's we'll see you Sunday. I'm Josh. Thanks.
And reflect from the mountains so all souls can see it. And I'll stand on the ocean until I start sinking. But I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard rains are gonna fall.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.